another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler, it really doesn't matter.
Hi, this is Jack Spierko. Welcome to another edition of the Survival Podcast. One man's view of the changing world and changing economic times and the things that we can do to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. I want to start out today, folks, with a couple things, response to some comments on the blog recently, mainly about the audio quality of this podcast. Just a reminder for those of you who listen daily, or just maybe some information for those of you who maybe just started listening. I was told yesterday that it sounds as though I'm recording this podcast in a moving vehicle. There's a reason. I record this podcast in a moving vehicle. My mobile studio is a 2005 highly fuel-efficient Jetta TDI, and I record this podcast on a 50-mile commute between Arlington and Frisco, Texas on a daily basis. That does hamper the audio. I'm working. I'm slowly investing in different equipment. I just don't want to buy really expensive equipment and try it out and have the same results. So I'm slowly making changes. I'm slowly trying to improve the audio quality. And maybe one day I'll be into a position, maybe after I migrate myself from my suburban place to my country retreat up in Arkansas, where I can record in a real studio environment. If I get there, I get there. For now, I have two choices. I either put out the information with the quality of the audio that I can do right now, or I don't do it. My choice is to put it out there. It seems like most people are willing to deal with some of the echo and some of the background noise in order to get the information. So I'm going to keep podcasting. I hope you'll endure with me and keep listening. By all means, if you have a recommendation for any equipment that may improve the quality of a podcast inside a moving vehicle, please use the contact form at thesurvivalpodcast.com and go ahead and send them to me. Next thing I want to do is the beginning of the show rather than the end of the show, as I've been doing. I want to remind everybody we do have a listener appreciation contest going on. Simply by helping me tell others about the Survival Podcast, you'll be entered into a contest. I will be giving away five copies of a single book that I wrote very, very soon. The big prize is an iPod Nano. I'm going to be giving away a really nice 8-gig iPod Nano. Those things are about $175, so it's a good prize. When we hit 1,000 listeners, we're very close to 500 right now. I'm also looking for some other prizes that I can give out. And anybody that wins a small prize does not get removed from the opportunity to win the big prize at the end of the contest. And you know me, folks, I like to do stuff like this. So when we get 1,000 listeners, guess what? We'll be launching a new contest and probably something even cooler as a prize for that contest. So, and if you're already in the contest, as long as you are willing to keep telling people, I'll keep running you over and over. So make sure you enter that. Great. So let's get on with the topic of today's show. I have nothing to say today about American politics in spite of the Democratic Convention. I'll wait till that whole rigmarole's over and give you a 5-minute review of my feelings on it. But for now, we're just going to go into our topic today, and today's topic is going to be preparing for a pandemic. Now, most of what I'm going to talk about today is actually preparing for a pandemic flu outbreak. There's some reasons for that. I'm going to give you some statistics in a minute, but it's mainly because this is something I haven't done as much research on as I should have. I was asked about it yesterday, and a lot of times I'm suggested a show topic or whatever, and I have to do a ton of research before I can put together a useful 30-minute show on it. There's so much information published by our government that's relevant to what we talk about that I was able to turn this one around rather quickly. So I'll tell you what, we're going to be doing more podcasts in the future about pandemic flu and about other pandemic possibilities and preparations for them, because I found so much information, it's unbelievable. Most of it's actually put out by the government, and a lot of it sounds like the advice we discuss doing every day right here on the Survival Podcast, and that folks like yourselves are blogging about, and that folks in various survival forums and discussion groups all over the internet are discussing. The things that we do that mainstream people maybe look at and think is a little overreactive, it turns out that our own government is saying you should be doing them. So let's get on with that. Before I do, though, I want to kind of point out why this pandemic flu outbreak is so feared. Let's not start out with the fact that it's avian in nature, the bird flu as it's been called. Let's just look at the history of what pandemic flu has done in our country in the last 100 years. From 1918 and 1919, returning soldiers brought with them what was called the Spanish flu to the United States. During that outbreak in the United States, 670,000 people died. 670,000. And realize there were a lot less people around back then than there are today. In fact, I believe that if you look at the statistics, we lost far more people to the Spanish flu after World War I than we lost in World War I. I'm not sure of that, but I believe that is the case. Worldwide, the Spanish flu from 1918 to 1919 killed 50 million people. All right. In 1957 to 1958, we had another outbreak of flu pandemic in the United States. It killed 70,000 Americans and 1 to 2 million worldwide. From 68 to 69, we had another pandemic flu. Killed 34,000 people in the United States, 700,000 worldwide. Now, those numbers decline. That may give you some false comfort, and you may believe that that's all because of better health care, better policies, and things like that. Just turns out that the 1918-1919 flu was particularly deadly and lethal. The majority of people that died from it actually died from pneumonia that they got from it. This avian flu is a huge blip on the radar for all governmental bodies as a threat, and here's why. And I want you to think about the fact that when 670,000 people died of the Spanish flu in the United States, a heck of a lot more people than that actually caught the flu. Many were able to survive despite the level of medical treatment that was available. With today's medical treatment, and even in the far corners of the world like Indonesia where most of this stuff is going on, there's pretty good medical treatment. There's better medical treatment in Indonesia today than there was in the United States in 1918. Trust me, that's the case. Well, since 2003, there have been 385 reported human cases of avian flu. Okay? 385 cases. 243 of those 385 people died. Now understand that the hospitals treating them were not overloaded with thousands of people like they would be during a pandemic. The most cases from one area were Indonesia. In Indonesia, there are 135 cases of avian flu. 110 deaths. 110 out of 135. So you can see why this thing is considered a big threat. Now, here's the good news, if there is good news about avian flu right now. Thus far, all the recorded cases of humans getting this bird flu have been directly transmitted from animal to human. It has not made a leap where it transforms from human to human contact yet. Okay? The problem with flu vaccines is they are remarkably virulent in their ability to mutate. I mean, if you've ever wondered why people have to get a flu shot every year, it's because the flu continues to change by little biological mutations, and the flu that you're vaccinated against this year, if the vaccine does work, will be different next year when the new flu comes around. So what the people that prepare the vaccinations are doing is they're looking at the flu evolve, and then they pick the strain or several strains that look like they're going to be the biggest threat in the coming year. That's what they make the vaccine for, and then that's what they vaccinate people for. And I know some people are really against vaccines, and I know you have your reasons, and I've seen your discussions, but whether you like vaccines or not, the flu vaccine has saved countless millions of lives by controlling the spread of flu, because people die from the flu every year, especially older people, very young people, and people with compromised immune systems. So it also has saved us countless lost dollars. Now, can I tell you that every year I run out and get my flu vaccine? No, I don't. I probably should. You probably should, too. The problem with this avian flu, this H1N1 strain of the flu, is that we cannot develop a vaccine for it that is useful right now. As long as this thing is in a state where it only is transmitted from an animal directly to a human, it doesn't make a human-to-human airborne transmission. That's where it's at right now. it's not a huge threat as it is today. In America, we haven't had any cases. Well, that's because we don't keep poultry and drink its blood, eat it raw, walk around barefoot where it does its business, and things like that. These are the ways that these people in these third world nations are contracting this flu today. I'm not putting those people down. Okay, we had little barefoot kids running around feeding chickens in this country 100 years ago. It was probably not the healthiest thing to do. Fortunately, there wasn't an avian flu to be contracted back then yet. All right, but today, that's reality. In America, we don't have that, and in other parts of the world, we do. That's where this thing has been popping up lately. People are living very close to their animals, too close for comfort, and when these animals become infected, they're spreading the virus to humans. So if you make a vaccination for that strain of flu and you give it to people, odds are if the virus mutates in a way that allows it to go from me to you, that new mutated version of the virus will not be affected in the least bit by the vaccine. So science is playing a waiting game. They're waiting for a strain of this thing to jump to humans, and they're praying to God it doesn't happen because of the consequences, because of the high death rate of the people that have gotten it thus far. Now, here's the other side of that. It could make the jump, and the mutation may take away some of its ability to kill. It may become much less lethal, but we don't know that. It could become more lethal. So it's something we have to prepare for. And what I want you to realize as I go through this today, again, I'm talking about the avian flu because it's what all the information is about out there. However, this information really would apply the same to any type of pandemic, any virus or extremely virulent bacterium that could be spread, or even some sort of chemical or biological warfare that could be launched at some point. So the government has an entire website set up about the flu and the possible pandemic with things that individuals, organizations, etc. can do to prepare. So this is not, you know, extremist, survivalist community speech here. This is from a government website that I'll link to in the show notes. There's a few statistics that I've given you that are from the World Health Organization, and a few more things here that I'll give you from the World Health Organization that have been linked to from this site from the government, which I believe is pandemicflu.gov. I'm not sure, though. Go by the Survival Podcast, check out the show notes. I'll give you a hard link from there to make sure you get to the right place. My only point here is that this is well thought out information being publicly published by our government officials. So I know some people don't trust the government very much, but when you hear this, you're going to say these boys got it right. To a degree, and I'll give you my comments on that as we go. The first thing under the individual preparation is to understand that social disruption will be widespread. In our language, I think that means the shit will hit the fan, all right? That you will not be able to travel freely, okay? And that all of the things that you generally do will be disrupted. And all of the things that you generally rely upon to get food, water, services, transportation may not be available because people will either be afraid and not do it or because of a government-ordered quarantine, which I think is more likely. And that may be a combination of the two. And the real danger may be the people that feel like they want to go where they want to go anyway, at a time when nobody should be going anywhere. More on that in a bit. We are told to expect service disruptions to hospitals, which might be the very place that you most need to get to if you have a severe disease. Banks, which means you better have some money on hand, although if you have cash on hand during a quarantine, I don't know what good it really does you. Expect disruptions to stores. Expect disruptions to the post office. So I guess you won't be mail ordering food either. Okay? So think about that. The main things that you need are to be able to go out and buy food, to be able to order or ship things or mail things to people, to be able to get into stores, to be able to get to your money, and to be able to get to a hospital or other medical facilities. And what the government's telling you is during an outbreak, expect those services to be disrupted, period. End of story. They also are advising you to think about people that have special needs, people that maybe have certain diseases or afflictions or can't take care of themselves, maybe people that live in some sort of assisted living facility where staff has to come in every day to help them. you may need to make arrangements in advance to immediately extract them from that location and take care of their needs yourself, should you have time to do so. Definitely you need to think about that and have a plan for it if that applies to you. All right? And your worship needs. Don't think you're going to be going to church every Sunday to pray during this stuff. If worship and prayer is important to you, you may need to have a plan for how to fill that need for yourself beyond individual prayer. That may take the form of conference calling should the phones and power not be disrupted, or maybe some type of chat room that you guys set up on the internet or something like that, because as far as I know, there's no human biological virus that can be transmitted through the internet, only computer viruses. So these are things, again, that the government is saying, hey, you need to think about this stuff. This is the big one, and I don't think people are in touch with this because the reality to it is really so horrifying. It's more horrifying as a whole than how many people might die. And that is, being able to work might be impossible. Okay? Just might not be possible to work at all. So one of the things they say is try to work from home. Well, if you have a job that would enable you to work from home, great, talk to your employer in this situation during quarantine, unless he's an idiot or she's an idiot, they'll probably be more than happy enough to accommodate you if they can, because they want to keep their business running. Ask your employer if they have a plan. I think most of us, if we went to our employer and say, do we have a plan for the company if we have a pandemic flu outbreak, we'd get blank stares. There is things that the employer can do to put a plan in place. There's resources available on this website. Again, I will link to those resources from the show notes. It might be something you want to give to the person that runs, heads, or manages your company or division. The next thing is to plan for a reduction or loss of income. Uncle Sam is telling you, if we have this thing, expect that you could lose your job. All right? Just expect it. Now, I think a lot of people are like, well, if there's a quarantine, my employer can't fire me. Well, if there's a quarantine, your employer can fire you. There's absolutely no law protecting you from an employer firing you because you don't come to work during a quarantine. All right? Now, your employer, unless he's a complete jerk, is not likely to fire you during a quarantine. But this is where we have to start, some of these things we have to start looking at the fantasy world that some people live in. I want you to think about this. Now, if you work for IBM, odds are they could guarantee you a job as long as they're not completely trashed and destroyed by this event. Okay? If you work like most Americans for a small to mid-sized business, they can run out of money. They're not all a bunch of rich fat cats, folks. I run a business of my own, and I'm telling you that this type of thing, I would try to let people work from home. In our case, we probably could work from home, but our clients may end up having to shut down operations. Due to that, they may stop paying us or tell us we can't use your services for now, and if I don't have the revenue coming in from one end, I can't pay it out the other end, and I got to let people go, not because I want to, not because I'm mean, not because I'm a jerk. And if they passed a law that said, I have to give you a job, you're going to have a job making $0 because I don't have anything to pay you. All right? You don't have a right to a job in this country. People think they have a right. You do not have a right to a job. You have a right to work if somebody wants to hire you. That's how our country works today. So I'm sorry to tell you that one of the things you have to plan for is a complete loss of income. So what that tells you is that what we've been saying here over and over and over again, save money, save money, save money, and protect and preserve your wealth applies to this threat. Another thing that they say to do is find out about leave policies. Does your union have a leave policy? Again, this is fantasy land stuff, people. If it's a 1 week or 2 week shutdown, great. Okay, fine. If those things are in place, take advantage of them, use them. If you have an entire economy shut down for 30, 60, or maybe 90 days, which it might be longer for this thing to pass, these companies aren't going to have the money to pay. All right? Unless you're talking about the global giants that have massive cash reserves, and even those people can run out of money and the ability to continue to pay you. So, I mean, again, this is this fantasy world, and one of the FAQs that I looked at or frequently asked questions was exactly that. If there's a locally ordered quarantine where I live, but not where my employer is, and I don't go to work, can I be fired? And the answer was, there's no federal legislation protecting you from being terminated, even though you can't go. All right. And like I said, that's fine. But again, the reality is that something like this that shuts the country down, if it's more than 30 days, there's going to be massive numbers of people laid off or completely terminated simply because the company no longer can afford to stay in operation the way that it is. And this concept that people have that, oh, you know, that I should be protected in my job and I should have my job and I'm a good worker so I should be kept, I don't care if all that's true. There's a fundamental reality. When there's no more money, there's no more money. So that's something you have to plan for. And again, the other side of that is, even if you have cash reserves in this situation, what you really need are food, okay, water, shelter, all right? Because it may be very difficult for you even to pay your bills because the postal service may not run. Don't think that can't happen. If you think about a quarantine is only good if it's followed by everyone. As long as anybody's running around, right, especially transmitting things like letters and paperwork, right, that's going to be an issue. So one of the things you may want to set up, at least for your critical bills, such as electrical, gas, your mortgage payments, is online bill paying or automatic draft from your bank account. So you know, if you have enough funding in there to fund something like that for 2-3 months, all right? And it's important that you build up those reserves because you might have a lot of banks trying to figure out what to do, but you don't want to end up on the targeting end of anything if you haven't paid your mortgage for a couple weeks or a couple months because you couldn't do it simply because there was no way to get the payment to them. If that happens, it's likely that most people will be in the same situation. But as things start to filter out and people start to catch up, the people that are last to catch up are most likely to feel the wrath of the banker who will also be in financial turmoil and trouble. In other words, folks, what I'm telling you here is that this pandemic threat, be it avian flu or some other unknown pathogen, could be the catalyst that creates the economic collapse that we're all so worried about. Because it's going to shut the economy down. There's no way around that. The other thing it tells you is that schools are going to be closed. So one thing you can do is help your school plan. Now, I don't know what you're going to help your school plan to do. There's some documentation there. If you're involved with the PTA, if you're involved with the schools in your area, maybe you can help form a plan. But the basic plan is going to be no one come to school. Everybody go home. Everybody stay home. Don't come back until the quarantine's lifted. All right? Because we're not going to do an emergency response because one kid gets a runny nose. But when we know there's a virulent strain of pathogen loose and the government decides it's time to start clamping down, that's what you do. You send all the kids home, and they stay home. So plan home learning. So if you're homeschooling already, great. And what they're saying here is if you're not a homeschooler, have something planned for your kids to do because you're going to be awful bored. And it's not a time to stop learning. So have things available to your kids. Tell your kids, if we end up in a situation where they send you home from school, bring your books with you. Sit down and read their books with them. You're going to need something to do with them because they're not going to go out and play outside in the yard. They're not going to go play with their friends. As much as it's going to kill you to tell them, hey, you can't go outside, that's what you're going to have to do. That's what this situation means. This is a harsh dose of reality for some people. A pandemic quarantine would mean you stay in your home. All right? And then the other thing is consider child care. And I look at this and I go, we're back in fantasy land. So in other words, if your kids aren't supposed to go to school, you need to figure out, like, where to send them for daycare. Hello? It's not going to happen. Or have a relative take care of them while you go to work. Odds are you won't be going to work. Now, if you're an emergency responder, somebody would be first in line for a vaccine once it's developed, and you're going to be having to go to work to deal with the problem, then you do need to think about this. But you also need to think about, I don't have an answer for this yet, but if let's say I'm an emergency responder and I have to go to a hospital every day and work with people that have this flu and the vaccine has started to roll out and they've given it to me, do I not go home? Because the answer may be I don't go home until the thing's over because unless vaccinations are available for my family, my going back to the house is a risk to them. So thinking about child care is important. I just don't think, I didn't get that type of thinking about child care from the advice on this website. But you need to think about that. If you are a fireman, a doctor, a nurse, okay, a paramedic, anybody, a law enforcement officer, anybody that even in a quarantine situation would still be mobile, you may have to plan to not go home. You may end up in a situation where you're told you're not going home. Police may set up barracks for you to barrack at your office, the same with the hospitals, etc. Everybody's vaccinated here. Everybody stays here. Nobody here is going to take the virus on their clothing, their skin, whatever, back home and start spreading it among the population. That could happen. That may be necessary. If you think about it, if going home means that you might give your kids or your spouse a deadly disease, you probably wouldn't want to go home anyway. So that's something that we have to think about. Another thing is that transportation services are going to be disrupted. My thought about this is, well, duh. Of course transportation services are going to be disrupted. One thing it says to do is rely less on public transportation. Now, again, I'm thinking if we end up in a serious pandemic, we're going to be in a quarantine, and you're not going anywhere anyway. But I guess what they're saying here is we might get kind of a middle road where it starts to appear like there's a threat, but they're not sure it's that bad yet, and they may shut down buses, trains, airplanes, things like that, because people are held in such close quarters of confinement, and they're transported such vast distances, so they may shut down public transportation as a first step. I'm telling you, folks, when that step happens, I'm shutting down my household. If we get to a point where they're saying the buses shouldn't run, cabs shouldn't run, trains shouldn't run, people shouldn't be getting on airplanes, right? Well, then you shouldn't be going out in public anyway. But it is something to think about additionally. Now, this is where they start to come around to our way of things. Store food so you can make less trips. Now, again, I'm not worried about making less trips. I'm worried about making no trips. I'm worried about being able to hold in place and make it through this period of time and be able to survive for 60 to 90 days until this thing runs its course. Because, folks, despite what the movie tells you about instantly formulating vaccines and getting them distributed, in a real pandemic, the only thing you can do is hold in place and wait for it to pass and run its course and minimize exposure from infected to non-infected parties. That's why quarantine works. That's why quarantine is the solution. That's why, unfortunately, quarantine is the only solution in this situation. The next thing they say to do is have backup plans for loved ones who are far away. And again, you got to think about people who maybe have special needs. Do you have someone in an extended care facility, an elder care facility, something like that? Or do you have relations that are far away from you that just aren't prepared? And what can you do to help them in this situation? And I hate to tell you, in some situations, it may be you can't do anything. Because you traveling there risks you and risks them at the same time. But you do need to think about that. What, if anything, can you do for people that are far away from you? Think about, you know, if you use public transportation, other ways to get to work. Again, I'll tell you what, I think that's back to fantasy land, people. How the heck are you worried about other ways to get to work because the bus is shut down because you're under quarantine for avian flu? You should be going to work anyway. You shouldn't be going out on the street anyway. And that's why it's so important to prepare, because even if we end up in one of these hybrid situations where certain things are shut down but other things are available, if you're smart, you may decide, I want to keep me and mine at home for now. We're going to make do. We're going to make this choice, and you want to have the ability to make that choice if you decide it's time to make that choice. Then they really get into the things that we say all the time right here on the Survival Podcast. Boy Scout motto, be prepared. That's the headline. And it says a bunch of hyperbole and then getting to the point, stock some food that is, one, non-perishable, meaning requires no refrigeration. Two, easy to prepare, may not require any cooking, okay, and requires little to no water. This got me thinking, this advice. I'm all for, storing up food, storing up water. I've talked about that at length, various different podcasts. But why should you be storing food that requires no cooking? And why should you be storing food that requires no water? And why should you be storing water for a flu outbreak? It would seem that even if everybody kind of stayed home, power generation is going to keep running, right? The water pipes are going to keep running. And the water's contained. It's not likely to be a source of contamination for flu. It's some type of biological warfare. It may be a good idea to have some water stored up. And why couldn't you cook? Because the power would still be there, and as long as you paid your bills. And maybe they're worried here about the people, the everyday people, which I'm going to finish talking about here in a second, that would be most likely to have their power cut off in the situation for not paying their bills. I started to think, though, when I read this advice, that maybe they understand something else. Maybe they understand that in this situation, when they enforce a quarantine, that not everybody is going to comply with it, that this may cause rioting in the streets. This may cause people tearing things down, smashing things, destroying things, and that may be the threat to shut down our power grid. That may be the threat to shut down our water supply and other things like that, that we might have mass hysteria in the situation. And mass resistance to being told to stay home. That a lot of people, you can't tell me to stay home. Well, go out there and die. But do it in a way that you don't spread it to anybody else that's been smart enough to stay home. All right? And I'm going to talk about an enforced quarantine and what it means to our liberties and why sometimes you do have to yield to certain things, this being one of them in just a second as well. But, you know, here's the government saying, store up food, water, be prepared to survive without electricity in a city water system and a city gas system for an extended period of time. Now, that is the main mantra of survivalism. That's the main thing that all of us do every day. And if you go out and tell normal people, as they're called, that's you, and that's what you do. A lot of times they look at you sideways, they think you're crazy, and they think you're an extremist. It's the exact same advice right here on a .gov website put out by the federal government to help people prepare. So this is publicly displayed, available, and you know, marketed as public information that the normal people should take seriously. If you have people that are on the fence with the planning thing, that don't really think it's important, that don't really think it applies to them, this might be a good place to get them started. To point this stuff out to them. Because it has an air of credibility, you know, when we look at the government a lot of times, we're distrusting. But when it comes to emergency planning, folks, the advice they put out, in general, is usually pretty good and pretty spot on. Here's a perfect case of that. Another piece of advice they give you is to stay healthy. Now, I have to kind of say some things about the stupidity of this headline and then what follows. The first thing it says after it says to stay healthy is to wash your hands all the time. And that's probably a good thing to help you from getting infected yourself. Number one way that you're going to get infected is to touch something and then rub your face, your eyes, your mucous membranes, transmit it to yourself. Everything after that is about ways that you cannot, like, you know, throw out tissues, cover your mouth and nose when you sneeze into a tissue, throw them away, things like that. That doesn't do you any good, okay? If you get infected, it may help you not spread it to others. It's responsible. It's what you should do. But it has nothing to do with you personally staying healthy and building up your immune system. And maybe I'll do a show in the future where I'll talk about things that you can do during a pandemic to make sure that your immune system is high. But one thing that would never hurt is to have a good supply of vitamin C and increase your intake of vitamin C during this period. Will it guarantee you that you'll be healthy? Will it guarantee you to stave off the flu? Does it cure the flu? No, no, and no. But it certainly does boost the immune system. And that's the most important thing that you can do during that period. I want to close this show talking about two concepts that I think people aren't in touch with. Number one, the people that financially will be at the most risk in this situation are the everyday workers, the people that go to work every single day and do kind of the menial, low-level jobs, convenience store workers. And if any of these positions are something you have, I am not putting you down by saying these are kind of menial or low-level positions. I'm just giving you the reality. They generally don't pay very well. Generally, you have to work crappy shifts or things like that. They don't have the greatest benefits. And generally, the people that work them don't have a large savings account at home. They're working day-to-day, week-to-week, and 1 week without pay is a disaster for them. So, you know, low-level clerical workers, warehouse workers, anything like that, you're going to be the first people to get shut down. Because either you're exposed to a lot of people from a storefront environment or you're in a large warehouse environment where there's a lot of people together. You're going to be the first places that have to shut down during a quarantine. And they're going to be people that are least likely to be able to survive it financially without massive problems. And don't think the government's going to be able to bail you out because the government can only bail out so much. I think one of the things that people maybe are really not in touch with is just how stretched the government already is financially. We know we're over $100 trillion in the hole, but that's just the beginning. We just had a couple regional banks fail, and those people that have their money in those banks are going to get their money back, up to $100,000 anyway, because they were insured by the FDIC. Well, the FDIC already is into a state of emergency planning to replenish itself from two relatively small banks crashing. That's what I'm telling you, folks. I think a big bank's going to crash, and let's see how they handle that. But in a situation where hundreds of millions of Americans, let's say 100 million Americans, are financially unable to pay their bills, they're not going to be able to do an economic stimulus package to fix that. So what we have to understand is we're going to get into a state where a lot of people simply don't get paid. They can't afford to not be paid because the employer isn't going to be able to pay them because they're not going to have the money coming in. Again, this is an economic crisis that's looming, and the people that will do the worst are the people that are the everyday Americans that work blue-collar, low-paying jobs, okay? People that do not have savings accounts because they can't find the money to create one. So what I'm telling you is part of your survival planning for any event is whatever you got to do to be able to save some money, do it and save it. And I don't care what your low-end job is, then get another one. Do whatever you got to do because sooner or later something's going to happen and you're going to get hit the hardest in the face if you're one of these people that lives paycheck to paycheck. There's not going to be a bailout for you. If you look at how much trouble the government had bailing out New Orleans, okay, bailing out the people in New Orleans, and a lot of people in New Orleans were prepared. A lot of people in New Orleans simply went somewhere else and waited it out and had means to do so. A portion of the population did not. Portion of the population got hit square between the eyes. And it was very, very difficult, and some of those people are still not back on their feet, and if you're not back on your feet from Hurricane Katrina by now, I'm sorry. It's time for you to be responsible for yourself, but that's a fundamental reality. Now, if the government had that much strain taking care of one portion of one city, imagine if they have to take care of a financial dissolution of 50% of our country, which is not out of, you know, limits. It's not out of possibility. When we had the Spanish flu in 1918, Americans didn't live deeply in debt back then. Today we have people that are deeply in debt. And then the other side of it is the people that are owed the money are going to have their own problems, and they're going to have to do some things to accommodate people because they can't just foreclose on everybody because, you know, it just doesn't work that way. So it's something to really think about from a financial planning state. Now here is the other thing, and this is actually what brought the suggestion to me. My thoughts on an enforced quarantine, possibly a military enforced quarantine, you know, taking away our liberty by telling us you will stay home and some guy with a gun will make sure you don't leave. Well, folks, that is a horrifying thought. Yeah, let me ask you a question. What other option do we have during a pandemic? A disease does not care if you're a libertarian, a Democrat, a constitutionalist, or a Republican. Diseases are equal opportunity. They infect all people. The only solution to a disease is for everybody to stay put until it runs its course. So in that case, and this is what's scary, is it's a place where justifiable use of force to enforce quarantine and curfew is not only necessary but acceptable. The fear is, when it passes, how much of the erosion of liberty will remain? And I don't have the answer to that. All I can tell you is in this situation, expect to be forced to stay put. Expect to have to make do with what you have and be prepared for it. So once again, I'll remind you as we close here, the Survival Podcast is all about helping you figure out how to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. And all the things that we've talked about doing today, improve your quality of life if something like this happens or if nothing happens at all. Again, I'm Jack Spirko with the Survival Podcast. Tune in tomorrow for another edition. Makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler. It really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.